This is the Hot Stove Report.
Going, goodbye baseball!
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle app.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time. Henry Aaron. The fireworks are going. Henry Aaron is coming around third. His teammates are at home plate. And listen to this crowd. A sellout crowd is cheering Henry Aaron, the home run king of all time. 7-15.
And welcome back to the second hour of Hot Stove on this Tuesday evening. Rick Riz along with Gary Hill. And we have with us Dave Sims and Shannon Dreyer. And folks, over the past 3-4 weeks, it's been really a tough time in Major League Baseball. We've lost so many of our heroes. And recently, over the last few days, one of the greatest players in the game of baseball passed away at the age of 86, Henry Aaron. The greatest home run hitter of all time, still in my mind, with 755 home runs. He was so consistent, 23 years, all with the Braves organization in Milwaukee and also Atlanta. And looking back on Hank Aaron's career, he was one of the best who ever played the game of baseball. And Dave Sims and Gary Hill and Shannon, he left really an impact, not only on the game, but what he meant to, social injustice and what he went through, especially when the club moved to Atlanta, chasing down Babe Ruth's record. What do you guys remember most about Henry Aaron?
Well, Rick, you and I are about the same age. And I grew up, watching National League Baseball. So I had the pleasure of seeing the Hammer when they would come through Philly. And I keep meaning to look it up, but in my mind's eye, he must have hit 350 against the Phillies.
He must he probably have hit, did.
He probably hit about 600 runners in scoring position. I mean, the guy was just unbelievable. And watching interviews that he had done over the years and even some recently, just a graceful man who withstood tremendous pressure, particularly coming down so late 73 and end of 74 with the record at hand.
Yeah.
And talking about millions of pieces of mail that he got, hate mail too. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. And yet, he continued to perform at a very high level. And I heard Leo Mazzoni today on TV with Harold and Matt, and they were talking, and he was talking about how gracious and smart a baseball guy Henry was in terms of what he did for Leo as a pitching coach and how he could, and what he anticipated pitchers were going to do, his ability to break things down, and what a great job having a good eye for talent when he was running the Braves farm system. Yeah. The one story I heard that Hank talked about, that he always sat on a curveball because nobody could ever get the fastball by him. I mean, that's completely 180 what everybody else does.
Exactly.
Look for
it was Hank Aaron.
The curve.
Yeah.
But they always talk, you talk about his hands. Like, I have a pretty big hand, and his, they engulfed me at that one time I met him. I only had one personal interaction with him, but just a wonderful guy and a tremendous, tremendous baseball player and a wonderful American.
Gary, you know the numbers in this game of baseball as well as anybody. I mean, the 755 home runs, second most in baseball behind Barry Bonds, the RBIs number one, well over 3,700 hits. You take away the 755 home runs, he still had over 3,000 hits. He was a great hitter with power. Gary, what do the numbers say about Henry Aaron?
Well, it's funny when you think about his career. I think you can make the argument that he's actually an underrated player, which is this thing to say talking about Hank Aaron, but you made the point. I mean, you take away his home runs, he still has 3,000 hits. He's got the most famous home run, I would argue, in baseball history. He had the home run record for a long time, and part of me feels like he is known as a home run hitter for good reason. But I think what gets overlooked is what a great hitter he was. I mean, you look at the batting average, you look at the on-base percentage, the runs scored, you look at the gold gloves. He was a complete player. and one of the best of all time. When I think about Hank Aaron, you know, I think about in this game, we've got all-stars. We've got superstars and Hall of Famers. But for me, there's like an upper echelon. There's that next level of guy. And yeah. That's where Hank Aaron lives. That's where Jackie Robinson lives. That's where Roberto Clemente lives. Not only the best of the best that's ever played on the field, but the best of the best off the field as well. And that is where Hank Aaron belongs in my mind.
Exactly. There's about a handful of guys that were so great that they could play above this league, and this league being Major League Baseball, where the best of the best. But, you know, he was in a group. Shannon?
You know, when Gary talks about what a complete hitter he was, I think that is something that sometimes gets lost in the home run hitters because of what we saw more recently with the McGuire and the Sosa chases and things like that. And when you go back and you look at the numbers and you see not only did he have home run, but he still holds the record for runs batted in and total bases. And to me, when I look at that, it came to mind, I'm like, was he Edgar with more home runs? I mean, to put up that many in those kinds of numbers, it illustrated what I couldn't see because I really wasn't watching baseball back then. I was little. It really better told the story of what he did on the field. But the thing that really jumped out at me and told me a little bit more about who he was is anytime you talk to Ken Griffey Jr. about the best players in the history of the game, Hank's name was either number one or number two or number three when he brought up best players. And my mind immediately went to Junior when the news came down. I knew that that was something that he would be crushed by that. This is somebody who has been very big in Ken Griffey Jr.'s life, but and so many others. I remember when we were at the Hall of Fame, he had the biggest buzz. Hank Aaron being there had the biggest buzz. There were whispers, he's here, he's here. Yeah. And I remember him, you know, them having to help him down to the stage, but he is the one that everybody else looked up to.
Here's something to wrap your minds around for the fans. He played 23 years in the major leagues. He was an all-star 25 times because of the late 50s and the early 60s, about 4-year period there, they played two all-star games to help raise money, more money into the players' pool for the pension when the pension really started to get going. So that's really something. I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Aaron just on a few occasions, but I've told this story with you a number of times. When I was with the Detroit Tigers, Hank was in town. And before a ball game, I had a chance to catch up to him and introduce myself and ask him. I said, Mr. Aaron, if you have an opportunity, would you like to come up to the booth and spend some time with me on the radio? And if you recall at Old Tiger Stadium, that was a really small booth, fit only two people, you know, side by side. And he said, sure, I'll come up. So I went up to the booth, got ready for the pregame show and the game. And I really didn't think that Mr. Aaron would come up. But sure enough, he did. So about the fourth inning, he came in and sat down. And, man, I was a kid again. I was nervous. Here's one of the greatest players, one of my heroes growing up as a kid. I had a chance to watch him and Frank Robinson and Ernie Banks and Willie Mays. And here's Henry Aaron sitting next to me. We started a conversation. So we're talking about his career. We talked about, hey, what was it like to hit number 715? I'll never forget his response. He said, relief. He said, thank God it's over. That was his quote because of the hate mail and the pressure that he got trying to chase down Babe Ruth and finally hit the home run off of Al Downing for number 715. But then we continued with the conversation, and I asked him, as I do pretty much everybody I talk to that had a good career in the big leagues or like Hank Aaron, a great career, I said, who'd you hit your first home run off of? Everybody remembers their first home run. And he went, oh, man, my first home run. Oh, man, little left-hander. And I said, and then I felt bad because I just said everybody remembers their first home run. So I said, Hank, you hit 755 home runs. Can't remember all of them. So we continued with the conversation as the game went along. And I could tell he wasn't quite there because he was still thinking about who he hit his first home run off of. And about 4 minutes later, I said, there's a ground ball, the short travel to his right backhand's long throw to first, in time, and he got him. And all of a sudden, there was a little lull, and he goes, Vic Rashi! And he scared the heck out of me. He yelled, "Big Rashie." I said, "Big Rashie." He said, "My first home run. I hit my first home run off of Big Rashie." And it was killing him. He couldn't remember. Finally remembered. He scared the heck out of me. But here I am with one of the greatest ever put on a major league uniform. And it was a real thrill because, once again, all my baseball cards came to life when I was a kid. It was just a joy to be with him.
Yeah, I had one interaction with him. I'm at WNBC Radio, 30 Rock here in New York. And Letterman's doing a show. He's still at NBC. It's about 86, 87. And I'm at the station at 3:30, 4 o'clock. And on the in-house router, you see Henry Aaron's going to be a guest. So 5:30, they start taping. I go from the second floor up to the sixth floor. I see the attendant in the hallway there. I said, "Where's Mr. Aaron likely to come out of after he finishes the show?" He's right behind me. So I go and I'm like a sentinel at this door waiting for him to come out. Comes out, I introduce myself, "Mr. N. My name's Dave Sims. I do a talk show downstairs. Would love if you give me 5 minutes and come down." I said, "Oh, sure, Dave." I'm in the elevator. I'm looking. I'm like, "Man, I'm riding an elevator with Henry Aaron." We get down to the station on the second floor. Jaws drop as we walk through the door. I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Henry Aaron, oh my God." He proceeded to give me 25 minutes of radio gold.
Oh, man. Remember the legends. You know, let them live in your mind and your heart, and they'll stay there forever. And Henry Aaron is going to stay in our hearts and our minds, you know, forever. What a sad day for the game of baseball with the loss of Henry Aaron at the age of 86. Coming up next, we're going to visit with a talented young outfielder by the name of Taylor Trammell. The Mariners picked him up in a big trade with the San Diego Padres last year. Taylor is one of the top young prospects in all of baseball, and he's among the bevy of young, talented outfielders right now in the Mariners organization. We're going to be back and visit with Taylor Trammell as Hot Stove continues after these messages.
Blue has a very slow, easy, deceiving motion, but when he lets that ball go, there's something else again. A rising fastball. Another one. Hit high and deep. Mike Robinson goes back 370 feet away. Looks up. It's in the upper deck. And it's 3-0. And Hank Aaron, who has had no extra base hits until right now in his All-Star career, hits a home run to make it 3-0. The National League and Vida Blue has been touched up for 3 runs, 2 of them homers.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And again, welcome back to Hot Stove tonight. And this reminder is part of the Mariners Virtual Baseball Bash. Fans are invited to visit the Mariners team stores for their January sales. Save up to 75% off of select caps, apparel, and novelties for the whole family. Plus, score Nike on-field gear for 25% off. Stop by any of the 4 convenient Mariners team store locations before February 1st to take advantage. And again, welcome back. Rick Riz along with Gary Hill. And now we have a chance to visit with one of the bright young stars in the Mariners organization, outfielder Taylor Trammell. The Mariners picked up Taylor from the Padres during the 2020 season last year, along with 3 other young players. Taylor, welcome to the show. Where are you spending the offseason, and how excited are you to getting down to spring training and get ready for 2021?
Yeah, so I'm right now. Well, first of all, thank you guys for having me on. It's a blast. I'm excited to be here. But right now, I'm in Georgia right now. Just preparing for the season, praying that we start on time and that we get to go out to Arizona. I do know that we can't go out there a little bit early. Usually I would be out here right now, out in Arizona, but you know, because of COVID-19, I'm not allowed to. So I get out there probably about next month, around this time next month, and you know, I'm excited to just be out there. I don't know how we're going to do with fans. I just hope that we get to be with the fans this year.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know too much about that, but I'm just excited to meet new people, especially within this organization. I'm excited to be out there.
Hey, I hear congratulations are in order. You're engaged.
Yes, I am. I'm excited. That's my girl, my boo. So I'm excited. It would have, you know, for me, it would have been a little bit earlier, but, you know, she was in college and I was just waiting for her to graduate so that we could be a little bit more stable and stuff like that. But I'm just excited it fell through. It was honestly, I'm surprised that people kept the surprise in order. And it was honestly, it was just a great day overall.
All right, buddy, I got to ask you, how did you pop the question and where?
Okay, so there's this place out in Atlanta. It's called the Swan House, and it's a beautiful house. It's a mansion. It's huge, and there's a courtyard in it. So from the courtyard, there's a view of the house. So my best friend, she actually found the place. We had kept it a secret. So we went there. She kept calling me, like, to see where the whole – it's a long story, but we came down the steps. We had a red carpet, pictures of us, and everybody asked me, like, was I nervous? I wasn't nervous. I knew she was going to say yes, but when my foot started to go back as, like, I'm kneeling, that's when I kind of was like, oh, crap, like, this is for real, like – I can't go back, you know.
Yeah, this is going to happen.
So that was I was like, this is going to happen. Like, this is for real. Like, I'm like, I can't like not say like I can't get back up. Like, I'm already in it. So I was very excited. I was very happy. She's an amazing girl, and I'm just so happy to call her my fiance and my future wife at this point. So I'm excited.
Taylor, we just spent the last 20 minutes or so talking about one of the real legends of this game and Hank Aaron. I know you had a chance to meet Hank Aaron a couple of years ago. Tell us the story again about meeting one of the greatest there's ever been.
Oh, man. Okay, so this was, first of all, my condolences to his family and his friends and everybody that was close to him and everybody around the baseball community that knew him. This hurt a lot simply because I'm from Georgia and I'm from outside of Atlanta, but he meant a lot to a lot of black players, not even just a lot of black, he meant a lot to everybody in Atlanta, and just the way that looking at him, what he went through in his career, how he handled a lot of the adversity that he went through, from being obviously the best player on the field for 21 years, I'm pretty sure it was. Just seeing him deal with all that stuff on and off the field, when I know, you know, he could have handled it a completely different way. And sometimes he probably did. He's human. And seeing him, how he handled it, how he was to people, how he was to me when I first met him. I mean, I look at him and I'm like, I wish I could just be like how he was, just like a small bit of that. And it hurt a lot when I found out. I was working out and somebody said, hey, Hank Aaron passed away. And I just like, no chance. I was like, no, this can't be it. And the one, I'll tell you this little tidbit story. The first time I met him, I was at a pre-draft workout with the Braves, and you know, all their front office guys were there, and I didn't know that he was there. And so we're leaving. I'm with my granny and my mom, and so you know, I'm leaving. I'm like, oh yeah, the workout went great, and I see somebody stops me. They're yelling at me, hey, hold up, somebody wants to see you. So we're just waiting, and we see this person, you know, driving on like a go-kart, somebody in the passenger seat. I'm just kind of like, okay, probably somebody at the front office and whatever. And I look, and as he gets closer, I'm like, there's no chance. And I'm looking, he gets closer, and it was like an aura of him was just like beaming. And I was like, oh my goodness. He was like, hey, Taylor, I was like, you don't need to say anything. I know who you are. Like, don't say anything. I mean, I know who you are. You are Hammer and Hank. Oh, my goodness. I'm freaking out. And then, long story short, he proceeds to talk to me for about, I don't know, maybe about 10-ish minutes. I remember probably like the first like 3 minutes of it, and then I kind of was just like in awe of everything that he was talking to me face to face, and I'm just like, I think I should have remembered all that he just said, but I'm just like in awe that it's Hank Aaron, like seventh, like I'm just look, I'm like, oh my goodness. And the biggest thing was how big his hands were, and I had pretty big hands, and he engulfed my hands. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my goodness, he made me feel small. And that was just like the coolest day, and I was just so sad last week when I found out that he passed away.
Yeah, we lost one of our great heroes growing up, for me and everybody else, and you had that wonderful moment to share, with Hank Aaron. Who were your heroes growing up as a kid there in Kennesaw, Georgia, outside of Atlanta?
Well, I actually grew up in Powder Springs, my mom and dad, my brother, they're my heroes. And then growing up, like, I think, I don't know, it's so like, Dexter Fowler and Curtis Granderson really are the two guys that made me really like love baseball, really. And like, it was really cool, like, to see them as I was growing up, in the kind of like when I was a little bit younger, 13, 14, when baseball was like getting like really big in my life, where I'm like, I could possibly have this as a career. Looking at those guys, I'm like, golly, like, just. Those are guys that, especially like Dexter, like he's from Georgia, like looking at him, I think it was really just with the Rockies and then the Cubs, like those were like really cool days, looking at him, and I was just like, this is pretty sick. I think, I was like, this is like looking at him play, how he had so much fun. I was like, I could be just like this guy, and that was just great for me. So those were like the guys that really like, molded me into who I am.
When you look at this upcoming season, what are your goals? What would you like to accomplish this year?
Wow. I think for me, personally, I want to win everywhere I go. There are some personal goals I try to keep to myself. And I'll give you one of them, is just being the best teammate that I can be on and off the field. But as far as like me contributing, like, I want to win, and that comes down, obviously to like the little details, having good at bats every single time you get up, quality at bats when you get up every time, making the small plays, whether it be a ground ball to me and I come up making a throw to second, or keeping that guy from running. I want to do that. Those are my goals this year, so that I can contribute to those guys and pretty much back those pitchers up as much as possible and drive in as many runs as possible so I can help the team win. That's really, cut and dry how I want to be this year. Just win.
I love that, Taylor. Visiting with young outfielder Taylor Trammell. Taylor, 2020 was a strange year for all of us trying to play through a pandemic and no minor league season. You had about 30 players down in Tacoma at the alternate training site. How much work were you able to get in there to get ready for the offseason, get in some work now during the offseason, get ready for spring training? What was that experience like for you?
It was different. It was different. I'll say it's had a bit difficult as well because we didn't have fans with us. But I got in my work. I got, my ABs in. I got a chance to face some really good arms. I think that it was, honestly, it was great, overall, the experience. Because, I got to talk to some of the guys that were coming down from the big leagues just to see how it was up there and everything like that. I think that it was just a great time. And it was a smooth, very, very smooth transition. I thought it would be a little bit like of a weirder transition because I just got traded in a condensed season with a pandemic. I thought it was going to be a little bit more difficult to, find new guys to, talk to and stuff like that. It was smooth. I knew a lot of guys within the organization. A lot of guys were very open with me. A lot of guys were just very welcoming of me, and I thought that was great. So, it was a very good transition with this season.
Taylor, I'm telling you, if your talent matches your personality, son, you're going to have a successful career in the big leagues for a long time. We love visiting with you, and I can't wait to see you in a Mariners uniform at spring training. Hope to see you up in Seattle real soon. We can't thank you enough for the visit, buddy.
Thank you guys for the time, and I'm just very excited to be with this organization. I really do appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here. Outfielder Taylor Trammell and Hot Stove continues. We will wind it down right after this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And the 0-1 pitch to Laureano from Yakabonis. On the way, swinging a high fly ball deep left center field. On the run to the warning track. Kyle Lewis near the wall. Leaps up and he makes the catch. Holy smokes, Kyle Lewis over the wall in left center. Brings it back. And he takes a grand salami away from Ramon Laureano.
Ah, yes, one of the many highlights from Kyle Lewis this past season. Rookie of the Year in the American League. What a season it was. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and where it all began with his Mariners career as we connect with the Mariners area scout in the Southeast, John Wiedenbauer, who scouted Kyle Lewis back when he was in college at Mercer, also scouted Emerson Hancock. But, John, it is great to talk to you. It's great to have you on. I can't wait to hear some of the stories about scouting Kyle Lewis. But I have to think, after scouting Kyle and everything he went through, and then he makes it to the major leagues, your first sign to get to the big leagues, but to watch him win the award, win Rookie of the Year, what did that mean to you in the moment to see that?
It was, I got chills when they announced his name, you know, and it was even a lot of people, you know, reaching out saying, look, he's got it in the bag, you know, listening just to the broadcast every game. It's, you know, Aaron talking about, hey, he's a lock for it. You know, it's like, yeah, but it's got to happen still. And, you know, listening to the media, reading stuff and, you know, people were talking about Luis Robert and, you know, he's a good player too. And, you know, you just didn't know. And so the fact that he won, it was unanimous. It was, I mean, it was awesome. And I watched the YouTube piece that the Mariners did on him shortly after, and it brought back a lot of good memories of, you know, kind of the process and that injury. Oh man, it was tough. I mean, our scouting director at the time, I believe, was at the game when it happened, and he reached out to me and he was like, I don't know. He's like, I don't think it's major, but we don't know. Like we just didn't know at the time. Cause kind of like what Kyle said in that documentary, he wasn't sure what it was. He didn't think it was severe at the time. So it was kind of a, let's see what happens type of scenario. And then once they announced, you know, what the diagnosis was, it was heartbreaking. It was hard. You know, you felt like you were kind of going through the same thing. It was like, oh no, what, you know, what does this mean for his career? Last year was really his first healthy year back. And it was like, okay, you know, what's his ceiling? You know, what can he be? And I heard a lot of people saying this past offseason, he was really working on speed, agility, athleticism, everything that once he got on the field, even in spring training this year, I was like, man, he looks better than he did before the injury. I was like, this is exciting. This is what got you excited when you saw him before. And to see what he's done, you know, it's hard to say because I don't want to say I'm not surprised, you know, because you never ceases to amaze me. But it was something that you thought he was going to do, right? Because just the makeup, the character of everything he was, you know, that was, you were confident that that's what who he was going to be. We're so lucky that it's played out as it has, and as devastating of an injury as it is, it probably happened to a guy that could handle it, you know, and you know, somebody that can. Come back stronger. And I remember reaching out to him shortly after the injury, and he said, you know, hey, it's just a setback, you know, I'm gonna come back stronger. And that's everything I expected him to say after getting to know him pretty well. So
when you saw him play, what jumped out when you saw him in those early days for the first few times?
Yeah, so he was at Mercer, which is a during the Southern Conference, it's a mid-major type school, and He stands out on the field. I mean, his size, his athleticism, the way he can impact the game. And it was offensively and defensively, you know, he found ways to, you know, put the ball in play and hit the ball you know, with a ton of power. I mean, that's, he had power to all fields. I saw him hit home runs to all fields. I saw him hit home runs off of fastballs, breaking balls, changeup, like, you know, everything you'd want to see. But what really stood out was his defensive play, like his instincts in center field, right? It was, he was never the guy that you just said, wow, he's a burner, he's going to stay in center field. He was the guy that he had really good instincts, and he got to balls that you were like, man, that was pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he could go up and the ball that he robbed Laureano on this season, right? I actually saw him do things like that in college. And it was like, man, that's, you know, I wasn't very quick to say, hey, he can't play center field. I was like, I'm going to give this guy a realistic chance. And I think our organization did a good job of really, you know, being convicted and saying, hey, this guy deserves a chance till he stays in center field. And then when we got closer to the draft, he was pretty well known, even when I got into the area, that he was probably going to be a first round pick. He had a good sophomore year. He was the conference player of the year. He went to the Cape. He had success in the Cape, right? So he was a pretty well known name. Yeah. And he was already pretty high on the prep list to begin with. So he was already pretty well known, but his success throughout the spring ended up leading us to think he might not be there at 11. There was a lot of media that felt like he was going to go early, you know, top five picks. Some people even had him 1-1. So it was kind of like one of those things where I was like, man, he's doing so well and you're really pulling for the kid. It's just, I don't know if he's going to be there. And come draft night, it was maybe not a ton of expectations for me, but just sitting there, I wasn't in the draft room. I was at home. And sitting there watching the first couple picks come by, it was like, okay, we haven't heard Kyle's name yet. This is all right. And then once we started getting to like 6, 7, 8, I looked at my wife and I was like, okay, this is getting a little interesting. What's going on here? So I started communicating with some guys, and it really wasn't until the pick before, I think it was right after pick 9, I want to say, somebody reached out to me. It was like, hey, we think it's going to happen. So it was pretty much last minute to find out. And I couldn't have been more excited, you know, just kind of how it all played out. And we'll talk about Emerson here in a minute, but both those guys, like, just probably two of my favorite guys to scout, two of my favorite guys to talk about, to get to know, just guys that you draft them and you feel really good putting your head on the pillow at night, right? You're like, okay, I feel really good about what he's going to do in our system and organization, how he's going to carry himself, you know, how he's going to represent us. So I couldn't have been more happy with how everything went down.
You mentioned reaching out. It's something that fans don't get a chance to see, but you mm-hmm. form a relationship with players you're scouting, their families, and then they sign in the organization. You kind of help shepherd them through. I mean, there's a lasting relationship there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, I got to go into his house, which is, for a college guy, that's not terribly normal. Mm-hmm. Usually with the college guys, we usually meet with them on campus, maybe at the baseball field or baseball offices. That's usually more of protocol for the college guys. It just so happened that we were able to meet, I think it was over the holiday break, over the winter break. And he lives up near Atlanta, a little east of the city. And I was in the area. So it just kind of made sense. Our scouting director and our national cross checker at the time, they joined me as well. So I got to meet him, go into his house, you know, meet his parents, meet his brother, meet the family, kind of really get a good vibe for everything that him and his family, you know, are. And that was just kind of the start of it. And then every game I went to, you know, I got to see his parents, hug his mom. You know, you're right, you really form a relationship. You almost feel like you're part of the family to some extent. And then once we drafted him, I flew out with Kyle, his dad, and his brother. His mom stayed back because they had a draft party and they had a bunch of family that were in town. So they're like, somebody's got to stay back. So unfortunately, mom had to pull the duties for that. But I flew out and we spent 3 days together. I mean, we were together all day, just kind of seeing the city, doing some different things, getting to go to the ballpark and already feeling very confident of who he was. Just spending 3 days with him there was like, man, like he's so much better of a human being than I even expected him to be, you know. And you know, it was, but you're right. Like I texted him right after he won the rookie of the year. He was like, he shot me right back. He said, thanks, man. You know, you've been there from the beginning. Appreciate everything you've done. You know, it's good. It makes you feel pretty good about what you're doing.
Well, congrats on that. And who knows, maybe you'll have another rookie of the year here down the road. You know, you mentioned scouting Georgia and that's kept you pretty busy. I think the Mariners have used a high pick, 3 years in a row on a player from the University of Georgia, including the last pick. Tell us what you saw from Emerson Hancock.
Yeah. So Emerson was a little different than Kyle in the sense that I got to scout Emerson when he was in high school. So I had a little bit more history with him before this spring. And he was a pretty well-known prospect. So I saw him multiple times. I got to know him and his parents pretty well through the high school season. And then his parents always would come to games, you know, as a freshman and sophomore when he wasn't even draft eligible at Georgia. Got to see his parents and kind of keep in touch with him. But to get to see his development, I mean, he was an interesting player out of high school. And he showed you some velocity and he showed the feel to spin the breaking ball, but he just didn't hold his velocity, you know, as well as maybe a guy that you would feel really comfortable, you know, trying to select. And he was also very committed to going to school too. Both his parents were in the educational system. His dad was a football coach and his mom, I believe, was a speech pathologist. They were very educational based. So he was very, very confident that he wanted to go to school. And that was, you know, that was a decision. You respect it. But he, you know, got to really scout him for about 4 years, really, from his senior year of high school all the way through his junior year. And to see him progress and go through, you know, the strength, adding weight to himself, improving his mechanics, improving his velocity, doing everything you would hope he would expect. He added a slider, which was something he didn't throw in high school as well. So it was a little bit more of a complete package to feel like, hey, I've seen him progress and get to go through that. So, but another really impressive human being. Just, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better guy to get into the organization and just be around, you know, the other players and the coaches and you know, you're going to get everything that he has every day. So he's just another guy that it's hard not to pull for.
Throwing out last year because it was such an unusual year during a normal season, how many baseball games do you think you end up watching there during the course of a season?
Oh, good question. Just the spring or the whole year?
Oh, the whole year. Give us the whole year.
Oh, man. Oh, geez. There are some days during the spring we'll see upwards of 3 to 4 games. And it might not be the whole game, you know, pitch one to the last pitch. Sometimes it's if you go to see a high school pitcher and he's throwing 2 innings and you got a chance to go run over and possibly see somebody else close by, we'll do that. But I would imagine I see parts of maybe 150 games in the spring. And then we do some crossover work between amateur as well as some minor league coverage we do in the summer. So I'll see, you know, a bunch of amateur games and see some minor league games as well, usually. And then in the fall, you're watching a lot of scrimmages and a lot of, you know, team practices and stuff like that. So, man, to put a number on it, that's really hard. It's I would say a few hundred, to say the least. Yeah. I would think, you know, that you're seeing and you're watching. You don't really have a template for, hey, these are the guys that you need to go scout. You know, and these are the ones that you focus on. It's more, hey, you know, this is your area, you know, find the best players. And typically there are certain events that the better players show up at and that helps us, but there's always guys that that slip through the cracks. And so it always keeps you on your toes and we'll go to some of these big events and you got your head on a swivel trying to watch multiple games and seeing if just something jumps out at you. And it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time on the road and, you know, away from the family, which is hard, but it always seems worth it in the end, for sure.
I talk about it all the time. There's nothing like the MLB draft. I mean, you're talking about high school kids and JC kids and small college, major college. I mean, you're talking about hundreds and thousands of players. And I don't know if everyone realizes how much work that is. And it's fun to when it pays off with guys like Kyle Lewis and Emerson Hancock. So congrats. I mean,
thank you.
That's so great.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. You know, like I said before, it's probably two of the best guys that I could have asked for that I've had the opportunity to scout over the last few years that we've been able to get in the system. So hopefully they're big leaguers for a long time and take us to a World Series. That's the goal, right?
That's the goal. Sounds great. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Gary.
There it is, John Wiedenbauer, area scout for the Mariners. The Mariners Community Tour presented by Root Sports is back in 2021. It's virtual. You can follow public live streams, features Mariners players, broadcasters. They talk about the offseason and the outlook for the season ahead. And more information, good times and fun, dates, times, just visit mariners.com/community tour. More to come on Hot Stove right after this.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And again, welcome back to Hot Stove. As we wind down the second hour of Hot Stove, we had a chance to talk a lot of baseball with Mariners skipper Scott Servais. We also visited with young pitcher Justin Dunn and young outfielder Taylor Trammell, and also the scout John Wiedenbauer, who took a look at a very young Kyle Lewis and Emerson Hancock. What a job, and that's so important for any major league club. Gary, this was a lot of fun, and coming up tomorrow on Wednesday at 10 a.m., a media session with Andy McKay, plus some future stars. We're going to visit with Logan Gilbert, Jared Kelnick, and Emerson Hancock. Also on Wednesday at 12 o'clock, we'll have a virtual clubhouse chat with Julio Rodriguez. You don't want to miss that. And then at 6:30 tomorrow night, we're going to have Mariners Super Trivia with
Super
this
trivia.
Guy right here with Gary Hill. Test your Mariners knowledge for the chance to win some great prizes. Gary, you ready for the fans?
I'm ready. Oh, this is exciting.
Man,
I can't wait for this.
This
is right up my alley.
I know it. I love trivia.
I do, too.
I really
especially
do.
Mariners trivia.
Exactly.
Actually, something I feel like I'm good at.
Oh,
there's not many things I'm good at, but
I think
Mariners trivia is one of the things.
The fans are going to love that, so tune in tomorrow night at 6:30. Mariners Super Trivia, not just regular trivia.
No.
It's Super Trivia.
I want no part of regular trivia. I only do Super Trivia.
Okay, let's try to work in a question about Jeff Manto, okay? that'll be Super Trivia.
That will be. That is in the weeds trivia.
There we go. And then coming up on Thursday at noon, I'm going to host a virtual clubhouse chat with Mark McLemore, Jamie Moyer, and Arthur Rhodes as we talk about the amazing 2001 season, which the Mariners won 116 games, more games than any team in baseball history in a single season. At 7 p.m., we'll have the roundtable, our 2001 20th anniversary roundtable premieres on YouTube. I'll sit down to reminisce with members of the 2001 team, including, at that time, Brett Boone, Aaron Seeley, Tom Lamkin, and Norm Charlton. Then coming up on Friday at noon, Mariners virtual workout led by the strength and conditioning staff will get you in shape. And then at 4 p.m., the Inside Corner, the happy hour edition, hosted by Aaron Goldsmith, Marco Gonzalez, and their special guest, Kendall Grayman. For a full list of events at Mariners.com/baseball bash, you can find out everything that's going on. A busy week of baseball as we get closer and closer, Gary, to spring training 2021. Can't wait to get down there. Great show tonight, buddy.
Yeah, this was fun. This was fun, and the baseball bash has been a lot of fun, too. I know we've both done a number of different things, and just to hear from different players and people within the organization, it's been a fun week. It's been a fun couple of weeks, yeah.
We're bringing baseball to the masses here in the Pacific Northwest because of COVID-19. We can't get on a bus and go around to the different communities around the state and the Pacific Northwest, but we're bringing you baseball, Mariners baseball, virtually, so we can't thank you enough for tuning in. A lot going on for the rest of the week. Gary, that wraps it up. Another edition of Hot Stove, and we'll see you 1 week from tonight. So we had a lot of fun. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week.